D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. Joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the self-proclaimed number one hockey guest on our station every week, Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, author of the 32 Thoughts column. Elliot, I think the timing of your visit this week could not be more perfect, considering you had an opportunity to be around the Predators yesterday when they were in Toronto. I would love to get your read on the Predators having the opportunity to be around them yesterday, and if you had any conversations with any players or members of the staff that maybe were illuminating to you as to what's been going on with the Predators so far this season.
You know, Adam, a couple of things. The one thing that really stood out, me and a couple of the other guys I work with were talking about it, was how positive they sounded. You know, like, you had a tough week, three overtime losses. Then, you know, Stamkos says what he has to say. And, like, we were kind of laughing that or just smiling to ourselves. Like, it was almost like the players were kind of like, okay, we're going into Toronto, and then we're going into Montreal. Anything we say that's not good is going to be like a nuclear bomb. So we have to make sure that we paint this as positively as we can. And I think the other thing too, Adam, is I do think this comes with players. Like, you can't tell them, they're not going to come out and say, well, we've got 55 games left, our season's over. Like, they're just not going to do that. They're always going to think, we're the team that can overcome this bad start. I don't care what the history of other teams starting badly is. We've got a lot of talent in here, and we can overcome it. And we saw that. And generally, the players talked very much like that, and we all noticed it. I think, you know, obviously last night was a disappointing game. They kind of lulled Toronto to sleep for a couple periods. And then, you know, Matthews and Marner woke up and it was all over. It was tough to watch. You know, they've obviously made some changes to the system. You know, a couple of guys talked about, and I did speak to Andrew Burnett about allowing defensemen to pinch at the opposing blue line. We showed a couple of examples in our pregame show, including one brilliant one from Josi where it led to a goal. And the other thing that's clear is, you know, Andrew Burnett was a guy that he likes the quick ups, push the puck up fast, forward fast, forward fast. Well, other teams, well, first of all, the Predators aren't that quick. And secondly, you know, other teams, they're not stupid. They see it. They know what they're going to do. And Burnett wasn't a guy that liked defenseman to defenseman passing very much. And I guess, you know, they kind of talked about it as a group is sometimes reversing it helps you. So they've opened that up a bit too. And they thought they were doing better. You know, last night was a step back. You know, Marchessault was really interesting. I think there's definitely been heat on him. He has not produced 5-on-5. And, you know, he just said, look, I didn't sign up for 1 year. I signed up for five. Like, we're going to figure this out, and I'm going to figure this out. But, you know, the one thing was interesting is I didn't really talk to him. I just went and said hello. But, you know, you see what's happened with Tomasino, and you see what's happened with Fabro. And I see Parsonen not playing. And we've talked about this on the show about, you know, when free agents pick you this year and last year, it's really hard to sit them because it becomes this guy chose us and now we're going to sit them. I just think, like, that kid's got to play. And you know, because you know what's going to happen is eventually it's going to get to a point where the kid's going to say, look, like, I'm not trying to be selfish, but I want to play. And so I'd like to go somewhere else if I can. And I just think, like, that's a guy, like, if it's not going to work out in Nashville, it's for the Predators' sake, it's got to be on their terms and not Parsonen's terms.
Elliot, as you are fond of saying, when GMs are in trouble, their counterparts don't throw them a life preserver, they throw them an anvil. By the way, I hope you've copyrighted that. You could turn it into throw pillows if you want for Christmas gifts or whatever. But
That's good, Adam.
We talked about what Barry Trotz, the position that Barry Trotz is in. He doesn't want to make a rash move for a short-term fix that creates more problems down the road. And the players that he brought in, as you said, they have pricey cap hits. They have trade protection in their contracts. There isn't a lot that Barry Trotz can really do. We have seen him nibble around the edges, trading Philip Tomasino, trading Scott Wedgwood, waving Dante Fabbro. But I'm just wondering, with the way that the season has gone, I'm not sure which cards Andrew Brunette and Barry Trotz have to play. You mentioned in your column today something that we've talked a lot about, something we've talked a lot about here, and you just mentioned. One thing that we have not seen from Andrew Brunette is him reducing the ice time of his top players who aren't producing. And I know that there's a lot that goes into that, but do you think we might be reaching a point where the Predators may have no other choice but to send that message?
Yes, I think you are getting to that point. And we just talked about the issue with it. I'll tell you a story. I remember years ago, there was a team that there was a player, he was a free agent. He signed with a team, and the team started handing out some big extensions a year or two later, and then they started losing. And it was this player's turn for the big extension. And they said, look, like, we're losing right now. Your guy isn't playing, very well, and we just can't do this. And the agent was really upset at them. He's like, wait a second. You gave this guy an extension. My guy picked you, and that's the guy you're drawing the line on? And, ultimately you have to do what you think is right, and a lot of this is negotiation and pressure tactics. But I remember that conversation a lot. Like, this is the guy that picked you, and, this is the guy you're drawing the line with. And that's kind of what the Predators are going through right now. Let's just look at all the guys they've signed. I don't know who they're thinking of scratching, but Marchessault picked them. Stamkos picked them. Shea picked them. Ryan O'Reilly picked them. Luke Shen picked them. And, ultimately you have to do what you think is right. Like, it's a business. We're not in the making people happy business. We're in the win games business. And you have to do what you think is right, but I do think, Adam, that those things do come up. Like, the pressure comes, like, oh boy, like, the next time we go in the market, is a player going to say, well, I'm interested in Nashville, but this guy signed with you and 25 games later you were benching him. I don't want that. So those are all the things you have to weigh. And, I think the thing about Barry Trotz, I'd say, is this. Barry Trotz, it's not that he doesn't want to do anything. Like, he did something this summer. Like, we joked about it. Remember a couple weeks ago, Adam, like, all of a sudden, the best-looking girl in school, that's the National Predators.
Yes.
Like, nobody can look and say that Barry Trotz doesn't want to do anything. But sometimes the best move is to take a deep breath. And I think right now, barring anything I'm not aware of, maybe the best move is to take a deep breath, no matter how ugly it looks. And, I'll say this, and I did write this too, I do think teams would love to get their hands on Lauzon. And I've heard he doesn't want to do it. And you know what? Like, that's probably the right approach.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, we had, as we do every week, Barry Trotz on with Jared on this station. And, Jared pelts him with good questions, and Barry always has, he's good about, his answers. And he's always up front. But he did allude to Christmas Day, right around Christmas Day. If he doesn't see, some improvements, then he may have to, do some things that he probably doesn't want to do. And we all know what that could potentially be. Do you believe this team can turn it around to a point where they are competing truly for a playoff spot? Or do you think, once you get to that Christmas mark, there's not much makeup they can do?
Derek, I was told when I got into sports media that there was going to be no math, okay? But there's always math. And So I keep track of a stat. You know, if you're 4 points out of the playoffs after games played November 1st, there's like a 15% chance you make the playoffs. If you go back to U.S. Thanksgiving, and I know our guys tweeted this out, I want to say, I think it was going back to, I think, 2010, the teams that were in the playoffs on Thanksgiving Day in the U.S., I think they make the playoffs almost 80% of the time. It's hard, Derek. And, like, the thing, too, with hockey that makes it really harder is we have the loser point. So, you know, you go into a lot of – like, a lot of teams lose games when they get a point out of it, which makes it even harder. So, like, I'd love to tell you that it can happen, and it's not impossible, but the later you get in the calendar, and, you know, it's not only how far you are out of the playoffs now, Derek, it's look how many teams you have to jump over. Like, it gets really hard. And I think the thing is, too, is that I did think they were starting to trend a bit better last week, but, like, that game last night, like, that was a tough one. Like, once the Maple Leafs started going in the third period, unfortunately, there wasn't much Nashville could do. Like, I'll say this. The one thing, like, it's amazing. Like, I never would have thought this would have been the problem, is scoring goals. Like, UC Saros, the league average save percentage is .901. He came in last night at .911. You think you're great. You guys have the number one penalty kill in the NHL. You think it would be great. Like, I'm looking at this, and the players are in disbelief. Like, and Brunette is too. Like, who would have thought we couldn't score? And I have to admit, watching it, I'm in disbelief too.
Now, okay, we understand who Barry was as a head coach, hell of a head coach, Stanley Cup winning head coach. And we're still getting to learn Barry as a GM. But do you think it's hard for him being a coach, watching what he's watching and seeing it? Do you think it's hard for him to overstep that boundary of being a GM when a lot of who he is a coach?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, I think, you know, Derek, like, losing is eating him alive. I have no doubt that's true. He's a competitor. I think what I would say is that his experience as a coach has really helped his patience. I think there'd be a lot of GMs that might have done something rash. Even though the waving of Fabro and the trade of Tomasino, those guys have gotten the bump in Columbus and Pittsburgh. I don't think he's done anything rash, and I think in the long run, that will be helpful. Like, I do think there are teams that might have made a coaching change already. And I think very fairly, Barry looks at it like, I've been in that seat. He didn't get stupid in a year. This isn't all on him. I have to help him find a way to get through it. And I think in a year or however long it is, that may turn out to be his coaching experience. That may turn out to be the thing that helped him and the Predators the most.
Elliot Friedman is with us from 32 Thoughts, Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, it was good to see you briefly yesterday. I know it was a busy day for you with the rosters being announced for the Four Nations face-off and everything like that. That was a big day. It was fun to be in Toronto on that day. I got two questions for you, and one is sort of a maybe – building on what D-Mace just asked you there. But you've got Andrew Brunette, who is he clearly was onto something as a head coach. You look at the three different places he was: Florida, where he took over for Joel Quenneville, then as an assistant for the Devils, where they really made a big jump while he was there with Lindy Ruff, and then what he did in Nashville last year. He wants to be innovative. He wants to play a certain way. And it looks pretty clear that the guys that they brought in are not maybe a great fit for that system. And Stamkos, for example, he didn't have a shot last night. That's happened too often, five on five. He knows it. Yeah. You know, they're trying to talk through that. Barry Trotz said they had, you know, a good one-on-one meeting to try to talk through how we get through this. You talked to Marshall, so, but clearly that's been an issue. So what is a coach supposed to do when he wants to play a certain way, his team doesn't quite fit, and you're sort of forced to change your system? Is that more on the coach? Because I think Barry Trotz, as you just mentioned, when D-Mace asked you about Trotzy, he looks and he says, you know, well, I'm partially responsible for giving him these guys. I thought it would look better, and that's the pickle they're in right now.
Yeah, I think, like I've always believed, I've never understood coaches who are rigid to a system. I don't like it. Now, I think, and you know, Derek, I haven't covered football, but I heard this happens in football all the time. Like, if a coach likes a system, like say you have a coach that likes a 4-3 defense, they might target a player that they say, hey, this player is perfect for the defense that we want to play or the coverage that we like to play. And to me, that makes sense. But if you are handed a roster or you go out and you get players and you bring them there and they do not fit, like, let's use Stamkos as an argument. I think there was a $32 million on Stamkos. I don't understand why anybody would spend $32 million on a player and try to squeeze him into a system that doesn't help him. Like, I think in that situation it is the responsibility of the coach and the player and the organization to work together. Like, I think the best coaches, if they don't have the right fits for the way they like to play, they say, okay, we got to find a new way to play so we all can win. Because if we don't find a new way to play, the ship is sinking and we're all going down together on the Titanic. So like I said and I wrote today, they have started to make changes to the way they play in order to win more games. And to me, that's the way it should be. Like, Brunette and the players should be working together to say, okay, like, we have to change what we do or else it's going to be a disaster for all of us. So that's the way I look at it. You take a look at your personnel and you say, this is his strength, this is his strength, this is his strength. How are we going to work together to do this? You shouldn't be rigid to your system if it doesn't fit the personnel you have. To me, that makes no sense. And the fact that they have made changes, Willie, it says to me that they recognize that they don't have the ability to play the way that Brunette played last year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And you can see some modest improvements in a lot of the numbers. The only thing they're not doing, they're just not scoring. But let me ask you about that with one particular example, because you and I had a couple of different conversations about Tommy Novak, because he was an intriguing guy going into the deadline. A lot of people saw that he was potentially a free agent, very interested in him as a trade target. It was widely reported they could have gotten a pretty decent return, pretty good return for him. They committed to him. He struggled in the playoffs, and then this year he has really taken a step back, and that's under the same coaching staff. As you watched him last night, or maybe I'm just curious if any of your colleagues had any comments about him, because he's a guy that hasn't had a point in eight games. He went out for a while with an upper body. He got a collision. Looked like he was probably – they didn't say what it was, but we kind of know what it probably was. But he just hasn't done anything even before that, really, to speak of, nothing close to what he did last year.
And so you're talking about Novak, right? Just I cut out
Novak,
for a second,
yes.
Correct? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I gotta tell you, I don't get it. Like last night's a bad night to ask me, Willie, because we were all so focused on the Four Nations stuff. Like, I admit for you, like, a couple of times there when I was working on some things, I was like, is there a game going on right now? Like, I was focused on that. But, you know, I will tell you, like, you know, the one thing for me I always look at in a game is, like, do you notice someone? Whether it's good or bad, like, do you notice someone? And, like, I really like that guy. I think he's a really talented guy. But there's a lot of games where I just don't really notice him. And I just, like, I don't know. Like, I wonder is he a 2C? I think that's the question that we're all, like, to me, that's one of the biggest questions that the Predators have to sort out now, because they've committed to him, and I thought they should have committed to him. My opinion has always stays the same in terms of, I never changed from what I thought at the time. I thought they made the right decision. But I think now one of the biggest things you got to find out is, where is Novak's true place in the lineup? Where does he fit? And because, you've tried him between Stamkos and Marchessault. You've tried him in a couple other situations. And so I think you got to figure out, like, is that a Novak problem or is that a winger problem? And again, like, just that game last night, like, Willie, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I just didn't notice a lot from him.
No, he was invisible and did not get a shot, and they tried other combinations later in the game when it wasn't going well. So yeah. It's just another chapter in the can't quite figure the whole thing out to try to put it all together and score enough goals to win.
Yeah, it's been disappointing because I think that kid is a really talented guy. And like I said, I think Nashville made the right decision at the time. But again, it's just one of those things I'm looking at this year. And if you would have told me before the season that Steven Stamkos would not have made Team Canada, I wouldn't have believed you. And if you would have told me before the season that Tommy Novak would have the kind of year or lack of impact he's having, I wouldn't have believed you. There's a lot of things, like, it's clear now that the moves they made, and I think we kind of knew this at the time, fundamentally changed what worked last year, and it's taking a long time to figure out how to get to what worked last year, new personnel, and what can work with them this year. I have a question for you, Willie.
Oh, what do you got?
What time did you guys land in Montreal last night?
Unfortunately... later than we hoped. It was we landed after 2 a.m. There were some. We had to de-ice and do a lot of stuff like that. It was not smooth. So we
what
are.
What time did you get back to your hotel room this morning, then?
I'm going to register a complaint with the league, Elliot. We are not getting. This is the second straight year. If I remember correctly, it might be the third straight year we have had back-to-back Toronto-Montreal with Montreal in the back half. We are not getting quality time in this city, in Montreal, and that is just not fair.
Well, I give you a D-minus because only a rank amateur can't find something to do in Montreal at 2 in the morning.
let me just say, Elliot, we are very strategically located to some famous spots in the area, so it was not an issue of not being able to get there.
Fair enough.
Elliot Freeman, NHL's insider for Sportsnet, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, author of the 32 Thoughts column, joining us as he does every Thursday. Elliot, always a pleasure. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Yep, you too.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot had to say about the Predators coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. And joining us for our follow-up conversation with Elliot Freeman, Chase McCabe.
I had to come in. I wanted to talk Preds with you guys.
Okay.
Willie, too. You know, Willie's in Montreal. You know, hanging out.
You feel a little
Elliot
bit more.
Awesome.
Are you here
you
to feel try to back me up that we – are you? Do you have some pull with the league suit to try to – get more time in Montreal in future years? This is three straight years that we've been back-to-back against Montreal. That's,
yeah, let me work
fair.
On that.
It,
hang
this
hang
is
on.
Much fun of a city.
Hey, Gare, what's up? It's Chase. Yeah, how's it hanging, man?
I can almost guarantee.
We call Uncle Gary. I'll see what I can do.
Willie, I can almost guarantee.
If you know him as Gare, that's good.
Yes. Hey, Gare.
That's how you know you have pulled up.
Yes, only his friends call him Gare. Willie, I can almost guarantee that there was some bag chucking last night and that Hal Gill still found his way out after arriving at 3 o'clock.
Hold on, Willie.
I have not seen the bag chucking.
What's going on with that? I haven't seen like
the videos
of the bag chucking.
There's been some chucking. There's no question.
maybe some up chucking, perhaps.
well, I can't comment on that. I have not witnessed anything like that.
Well, Chase, you did want to join us, and since you're our boss, we can't say no.
Yes, you no, don't. Do
I'm,
that.
Joking, I'm joking. You're always welcome to come in and join us.
I think the discussion is really interesting right now because, you know, we brought it up today on our show, and I was kind of a little bit surprised of how much people wanted to talk about it. You could tell they just wanted to kind of get – they wanted to vent. Mm-hmm. They wanted to get it off their chest. You know, I'm of the belief that I do worry that are you too far into the season for a run to do you any good? You know, I heard Elliot kind of answer that question. But at the same time, I do feel like one's coming. And I also loved what Elliot said of I think that Barry and the Predators and Andrew Brunette are going to just kind of have to take a deep breath and then, all right, then let's see what happens. I've heard your argument, and I thought it was very, very well done. I'm not on board with that yet. I don't think it's time for a coaching change. I don't think it's his fault. I don't really know. I think it's a lot of people's – if you're going to blame somebody, I guess you can hand that out to a bunch of different people. Everybody's culpable. I like how you word that. But at the same time, this team is too talented to just blow it up and be the way they are. I really don't think it's going to end up this way. But at the same time, if it was to end up this way, I guess do you take some solace in knowing that you're going to get the draft pick?
Okay, Chase.
And I don't like thinking that way. Yeah, but
can't sometimes, and maybe in this situation, and this is for you too, Willie and Adam, maybe sometimes being too talented isn't enough.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you're extremely talented, but is there cohesion? Yeah, you're extremely talented, but are all the parts working the way they need to work together?
I know it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, mm-hmm. but how many times in the NBA do mm-hmm. we see three or four players join up? I mean,
the perfect example
is what happened in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. They were barely on the court together, mm-hmm. but when they were, the Nets did not do a darn thing. You can go through the history of the NBA, of the NBA. Super teams do not work. Now, in the NHL, because of the salary cap, mm-hmm. you can't really put together a super team. You know, like the Maple Leafs are a team that I guess has tried that, Willie, by signing four forwards to ridiculously expensive contracts. But
right.
the Maple
but
Leafs
three
haven't
of the four
been able.
Guys they drafted and developed.
Right. right?
Those are. Three of the four. Right? Only one was a big free agent pickup.
That is
like,
true.
Like a Stamkos.
That's true. But you rarely see you rarely see just a collection of superstars figure it out. And maybe, you know, look, I heard what Elliot said, and Willie, you mentioned it as well during Elliot's interview. If Andrew Brunette has made some changes to his system to try to better compliment his players, I give him credit for that. Mm-hmm. That is a good thing to do. Now, maybe we can do this tomorrow. We can get into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty as to what has changed, because I think that could be an interesting conversation. But it just comes down to me, the fact that, like Elliot said, of all of the problems we thought this team would have, scoring was probably at the bottom of that list in early October.
Yeah.
And I understand that shooting percentage, a lot of that is luck-based. And most times when a team has a bad shooting percentage, it eventually bounces back. But from the one thing that gives me pause about saying that is from a shot quality standpoint, they haven't been good. It would be one thing if they were fifth in the league at shot quality and 32nd in the league in shooting percentage, because then you would just say, man, that's just the worst possible luck. But last I checked, they were at or near the bottom of the league in shot quality. So it's not just
But it has gotten better. Since he's made those tweaks that Elliot referred
to. Which game did he make those tweaks in? I don't know. Which tweaks did he make those games
in? I would say it's been about 10 or 12 games since they've done that. And the word that they're using is sort of a catch-all, is they've simplified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And look, I haven't had Andrew Brunette tell me this or any, and I haven't heard him say this in any particular press conference, but I think it's got to be disappointing for him, because I think he really loves what he's done, the last 3 years, the way he has, it's innovative. It's not been done before. Remember all those articles about how he's watching soccer games, he's watching football games, he's watching basketball games. How do you get your best players in position? And he had something that was really working. And now it's got to be disappointing that, like, look, we did all this last year, and now I can't do it the same way this year. But to his credit, and I think with Barry Trotz and the rest of the coaching staff, they are working on it, and they have made improvements. It sounds crazy to say, but they're doing everything else fairly well except for scoring. Obviously, scoring is the huge right. thing, but the underlying numbers are getting better. And let's not forget, they have played four of the top six teams in the league during this stretch. So and four of the best defensive teams in particular. So that's why I think it's really curious what it's going to look like tonight and Saturday against teams that are not quite at that level, even though tonight's tough because we did get in very, very late last night. We were joking about it, but this is a tough turnaround, and Montreal did not play last night. So in theory, you should do better against Montreal, but this is a tough back end of back-to-back. You got the first game for Onanen tonight. So it's like they haven't had a lot of breaks, a lot of bounces, and they've got some serious things under the hood that they've been working on to try to get better. But it's not happening overnight. We know that.
Willie, I got a question for you because you're around the team. It seems like the mood, obviously everybody wants to win and there's a little bit of frustration there, but overall it seems like the mood's pretty good. Is that accurate to say?
I think I would be lying if I told you that, and this is natural, right? Are they having parties and everything going, oh, everything's fine. We're going to be, no, not at all.
I'm not saying that.
They are extremely frustrated. And after last night, you know, and Elliot, I'm glad he sort of admitted that he only sort of half watched the game because I think the Predators had if they had lengthened the lead, they had a lot of chances, but the same things that have shot them in the foot all year long, reared themselves last night. They're playing a really good game, standing toe-to-toe with a team that hasn't lost at home in a month. They're one of the best teams in the league on home ice. They're winning the game 1-0. They had chances to go up 2-0, didn't do it. Then they had a lapse for 5 minutes where the superstar players who have been winning games for the Maple Leafs make a couple plays, turn the game around. And then they get back. So they didn't play a bad game, but it's a dagger when you have a collapse like that. It stings so hard, and you're thinking, it's like when you build the sandcastle at the beach. You're like, oh, this is coming together. Right? This sandcastle, little by little, I like this. And then the wave comes in and just
knocks it over.
Knocks everything over. It feels like that's happened a bunch of times to them.
So here's why I'm asking that. And, Derek, I would love your input on this. I feel like that. Yes, frustration's there, spirits overall, like, hey, we're sticking with it. Does this team just need to play pissed off? Is that part of it? That they're just, like, you have guys that, and I'm not saying, like, you walk in and you're like, Stamkos, what are you doing, you stupid? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, do they need to, because, like, your game, for instance, there were times like, hey, you're not giving me the ball enough, so you're pissed off, and then guess what you did? You know, $150 and 2 touchdowns. Do they need more of that?
I think, okay, this is how I would sort of answer that question. Not necessarily in a game setting. Say in practice when we do 9-on-7 or goal, let's say goal line drill. And the offense is just scoring every time. It gets a point where those defensive players or the head coach, the coach on the defensive side, defensive coordinator said, no, forget this. We're going to run it. We're going to do it. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to run it until we stop them 3 times in a row. And guys' mentality switch because they know, like, all right, the rubber's meeting the road right now. We got to really step up. It's almost like a sort of last stance thing. Like, we need to do whatever we need to do, say they don't get into the end zone. So everybody sort of gets a chip on their shoulder. Everybody gets a little chippy now.
Chip on the shoulder. Exactly. That's basically what I'm asking.
I think it's almost and that's why, Willie, I brought up the whole when Barry said Christmas. Barry has drawn a line in the sand now. They're on the goal line. This is a goal line stand.
He's put those out there.
And he's drawn a line. He's saying, listen, Christmas, this is when things may change. If we don't get it going, so the line is drawn in the sand, what are you going to do?
And he wasn't saying that to you.
No.
He wasn't saying that to me. Mm-mm. He wasn't saying that to Adam. He was saying that to
his
players.
He was talking to his team. Like, this is it. Like, either you stand up tall or I'm going to have to make changes. Or I'm going to have to do some things that I probably necessarily really don't want to do.
Right.
Well, the Predators have 9 games left until the Christmas break, including tonight in Montreal against the Canadiens. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here at 102.5, 106.3. The game, of course, Willie and Chris Mason on the call on FanDuel Sports Network. We'll wrap up the show next. Jace, thanks for stepping in, my friend.
Thanks,
Willie
for having
Donick,
me.
Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 102.5, 106.3. The game. D-Mace, Vengen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Stillman and Company, upcoming at 2 o'clock. But before we leave today's program, I would like to give the SEC its flowers. And no, I'm not talking about college football. I'm talking about college basketball. Because in the SEC-ACC challenge, the SEC mopped the floor with the ACC.
Whooped them.
14-2. Of course, one of the two happened last night. Duke defeating Auburn. That was great. Harlan Vingen, my father, was there. He was fired up, had a great time. The other loss, Kentucky losing at Clemson. But other than that, the SEC, they are a force to be reckoned with in college basketball. Tennessee, probably going to be the number one team in the country next week. Kansas lost last night, fell to Creighton. As I just mentioned, Auburn lost at Duke. So Tennessee, probably going to be number one in the AP poll on Monday.
Tennessee looked good the other night. I was watching them play, and I'm looking at this team like maybe they're not as strong as they were last year. But this is a really good basketball team. And maybe this is the year that Rick Barnes can, you know, do some damage in the tournament. I don't know.
So they've got Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama is top 10. They won at Carolina. Florida's got a good team this year. Oklahoma's ranked. Texas A&M is ranked. Ole Miss is ranked. A lot going on in the SEC, Willie, in college basketball.
Yes, it's very deep. I think Vanderbilt is way, way better than they were last year. The more I watch, the more I like. We'd still have to wait and see, but that was their first true road game last night, and they won fairly easily against Virginia Tech, who, you know, Virginia Tech's not very good, but that was taking care of a ACC opponent fairly easy on the road. That would probably not happen last year. I think they won their 8th game. I can't even remember how late it was, but it was late January or maybe February by the time they won the 8th game. Last year, they're 8-1. I also think it's pretty telling of the ACC that, you know, back in the day, that was the league. But the last couple of years, with the teams they've added and stuff, they have watered down their strongest suit, I think. What was their lead suit as a conference? What was the conference known for? The great tradition of ACC basketball. Mm-hmm. They have screwed that up because of football. And so these are the things that, you got to do it. It's the money. There's all this money. Okay, but there is a price to be paid. ACC basketball is not what it was.
It's a sad state of existence, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, you've got Duke. You've got North Carolina. They're in Pittsburgh. Those are the three ranked teams from the ACC.
And North Carolina and Pittsburgh got whipped
yesterday
by SEC opponents.
Indeed, they did. So, yeah, you're right. The ACC has sort of fallen on hard times in college basketball. And the SEC, I was watching the Duke game last night. At the end of the game, they had in the corner ACC-SEC challenge, and it said 14-2. I was like, that can't be right. No way that's right. And then I thought to myself, yeah.
It just means more, man.
I guess it's right. More. But, yeah, to your point, Tennessee looking really good. And when you lose Dalton Connect, you wonder about that team's effectiveness.
Well, they went out and, you know, a young man that I know and been knowing for a long time, Chaz Lanier.
Yes.
They went and got him from, what was he at, FIU or Florida, a school in Florida. But he's an Innsworth grad.
He was at Northern Florida.
Yeah, Northern Florida, Innsworth grad. And I got to know him because he was really good friends with my son. And he's picking up where he left off when he transferred. So they brought in some really good transfers, and with Zakiya, you know, leading it all, this team can find themselves marching pretty far in the tournament.
Yeah, we will see what happens. But as I said, I anticipate that Tennessee will be the number one team in the country when the AP poll is released next week. Willie, there was also another local college basketball game that I missed last night that was quite exciting.
I didn't see it, but I went back this morning and looked at some of the highlights. A pretty exciting win for Belmont. I watched a game that they played earlier this year against Oral Roberts. If you want to just watch fun basketball with great flow, Belmont is really exciting. They won a game last night in overtime, 99-97, and they hit the buzzer beater. It was the classic buzzer beater of the ball's in the air as the buzzer goes off, and then boom, it goes through the basket, and everybody goes crazy. So a good win against Illinois State for them last night. So Casey Alexander's got them going in the right direction. They are now in the transfer portal game, not really by choice, but just by that's how the game is played. You have to be in the game. They got raided, some of their players last year got paid big time that they couldn't match to go up, and they've replaced them with guys who look really good, guys that, unlike decades of Belmont basketball where they were the best at freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, they have the three guys in each class. They keep continuity. They've adapted really well. And so congratulations to Coach Alexander.
That'll do it for us today. Predators back in action tonight against the Montreal Canadiens. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5 here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Of course, you can catch Willie on the call on FanDuel Sports Network. Stillman & Company coming up next, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Thursday. Peace. Have to go home, but you can't.